Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today once again by Mr. Peter Marsh. You know him from the LasserCast YouTube channel as well as Comic Books Transformed.
Yes.
They take comic books and they transform them into motion pictures and television shows. And that's what Pete's there for.
Yes, we review them. And they're also podcasts too, by the way, if anyone wants to come over there too.
Available anywhere podcasts are found.
Yes.
So today we are following up on what we did last week. Last week we talked about Masters of the Universe Revelation, which was the 2021 Netflix show produced and showran by Kevin Smith. We are today talking about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, also from 2021, also from Netflix.
Right.
This is sometimes referred to as like the CGI He-Man. You know, it's thought of as being for a younger audience and for a new audience.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing about this show, the way that I think about this show as someone who's a fan of Masters of the Universe is this is like a remix or a reboot in like the real sense, like take the same elements that were there and reconfigure them, change them. You know, Orko was an alien wizard. Now he's a robot named Ork Zero.
Right.
It's a lot of stuff like that. Pete, what did you think of this show?
I was a big fan of it. I think I might have enjoyed it more than the Kevin Smith version. At first, when I saw the artwork, I was a little hesitant to get into it. But when you said it was good, I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. I went through both seasons very quickly. And I find that all the characters are endearing. I think Skeletor is pretty excellent on the show.
I think they're easy to digest. I think you could go through them quick. And the internet, we talked last week, the internet hated the Kevin Smith show for stupid reasons. But then as a sort of part of that, they loved this. Not to say that this isn't great. I like this show and I like it more than the Kevin Smith show. But the weird thing of people pitting them against each other seemed unfair to me because Kevin Smith's show was so about continuing old canon that this show was allowed to not care about canon. Mm-hmm. Like if this were the only show that came out and they turned Orko into a robot and, you know, Man-at-Arms is no longer Teela's father and all of the changes that they made and it's more sci-fi and it's more cyberpunky, people would have completely had a fit. But because the Kevin Smith show came out and people hated it, everyone was able to go, oh, this show gets it right.
Right. Yeah, the Kevin Smith one almost kind of took the bullets for this one.
Yeah.
I honestly, when I watched that first episode, you know, you see Teela and she's got those weird kind of, they almost look like headphones that are floating by her head.
Yeah.
And, the city of Eterno is so different. It is like this kind of cyberpunky kind of place.
Yeah.
It seemed really off. And then, you know, you have Prince Adam and your favorite Krastine or whatever living in the jungle with like the tiger tribe. It seemed like a very different show, but it like sort of metamorphosized into the He-Man cartoon that we liked as kids.
Yeah.
And the episodes very much feel like that sort of He-Man one and done kind of episode, even though there is an ongoing story.
Yeah, I think you're right. It sort of begins in a very different place, but I think it feels like Masters of the Universe, maybe more than it looks like it looked when we were kids.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many interesting changes and things like Adam in this is like Rey from Star Wars. He is raised by the Tiger Tribe with Crass and Cringer, who in this is wise and brave and not scared.
Right.
And he doesn't remember that he's the prince. He knows that he has no memory. It's very like Rey. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. King Randor does exist, but the mother, Queen Melena, is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting because it's nothing's ignored in a way. It's all remixed. Like,
yeah,
probably the newest character is Crass, or her, mm-hmm. her full name is Christine.
Yeah, yeah.
But Crass, when she powers up, she becomes Ram Ma'am, as right. a play on Ram Man.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of there, and I don't know, maybe I'm slow, but it took me a minute to realize, like, oh, she's Ram Ma'am, and like, oh, they're calling Evelyn Evelyn because she's gonna power up into Evelyn. Like, once I realized, oh, this is like Power Rangers, or this is like a superhero thing, it yeah. totally changed the way I was sort of soaking it in.
Yeah. It is one of those shows, like, because certain properties, they just reboot over and over and over again, right? Like the Ninja Turtles, they've rebooted them a whole bunch of times. Ghostbusters are a couple of times. You know, My Little Pony. And I think that once you get over that idea that it's not the same thing from when you were a kid, I think you can start to appreciate the changes. And it is kind of like Power Rangers in the sense that they all power up. In our last episode, you mentioned how it's like we have the power versus yeah. I have the power. And I think that was a main guiding point for this show, was to make it like it's a group. Even though it's called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, it really is like this team of superpowered, you know, people.
Yeah. I tell you, it makes the name Masters of the Universe make more sense than yeah. it ever did. You know, it was always this vague thing of like, what does that mean? Who are the Masters of the Universe?
Yeah.
People know that, like, in the original pilot, they say Skeletor and his Masters of the Universe, and then they're like, no, they can't be the Masters. The good guys are the Masters, so call them his evil henchmen or whatever. And then this, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like, our team is called Masters of the Universe. And wow. then the bad guy team is sometimes called the Nemesis or the Nemesai or the right. Dark Masters.
Dark Masters, yeah.
And even Skeletor, he's Adam's uncle, which is actually something that they cherry picked from the 2002 series. Do you yes. remember there was a reboot in 2002?
Yes. I never saw that. Did you?
I didn't watch it, you know, because I was, you know, out being you know, a young drunk, but I saw like a handful of episodes, and I think I had a couple of figures. I didn't watch it like the way I've watched all of this. But right. yeah, they did they made Keldor, Randor's brother and He-Man's uncle.
Yeah.
And they continued that in this, and I think it works in a really good way, because it adds a sort of, like, I don't know, Hamletness to it, or like you know, Lion King or something.
Yes. I'm really glad that you brought this up, because the backstory for Skeletor is super interesting. You know, last week I mentioned the guy on Twitter named Comrade Bolsky, and how he did a whole thing on a whole thread on He-Man and like his origins. Skeletor's origins are super interesting too. He did a whole thread on Skeletor, and he was saying that in the original Masters of the Universe canon, like, there wasn't a description as to like where Skeletor came from. And eventually they added it to where Skeletor came from another world, another realm called Infinita, and it was all skeleton-faced people, which that's kind of weird to picture, right?
Yeah.
So that's the old school version, and they even made a prequel comic to the Kevin Smith show, and they referenced Infinita there, and they had all the skull-faced people in that comic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so eventually they come to this point where you have the 2002 show, and they have that guy, Cy Clone, right? Do you know that guy? Remember his toy from when we were kids? And so he was guarding this, like, sort of ancient Atlantis type kingdom, and it was called Gar. And so it was assumed that because he had a blue face, that everyone that lived in Gar was blue. And then they're like, wait a minute, what the hell's Skeletor's name? Keldor's blue, so he must be from Gar, right? Uh-huh. And in that cartoon, they also established that he, like you said, was King Randor's brother, right?
Right, and he has a very Harvey Dent type origin.
Right, well, yes. So in that 2002 version, he gets acid in his face, just like Two-Face.
Yeah.
And eventually, Hordak is the one that helps him, stay alive, basically, right? Yeah. But it was just kind of interesting because it kind of had that sort of that Thor Loki kind of dynamic, because the idea was that he was this guy from another kingdom, but he was King Randor's brother and he was this blue guy. And then he basically wanted to take the throne for himself. And that's where the skull face comes from.
That's interesting because in this, he's not blue, right? When Keldor is Keldor, he has a skeleton hand because he put it into the Havoc power. But
yes.
When he powers up, he becomes full Skeletor. But when he's not, Keldor has, you know, like white skin.
Yes, yes. And I wanted to just give some praise to the actor that plays both Keldor and Skeletor. It's Benjamin Diskin. And I just think he did a fantastic job. I started watching this show with my six-year-old daughter, who gets pretty scared of things easily in cartoons. And I kind of was like, oh, man, I don't think we can watch this show with this this Keldor stuff, because he just seemed too creepy. Like, when you first meet him, he's, like, stealing the essence from some Eternia guards, and, like, they turn to stone. But then he just becomes, like, full-blown 1980s Skeletor.
Yeah.
You know, and he's silly. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking last week about, I was saying, I don't know, personally, as much as I love Mark Hamill, I don't know if the Skeletor in the Revelation show works for me, because it's sort of like, it's scary sometimes and funny sometimes, and I feel like they undercut each other. But in this show, I feel like he's scary and funny, but it works. Because, he, you know, like the whole episode in season two where he gets a wishing stone for his birthday and he wishes to be where Castle Grayskull is. So it's him and Duncan and Castle Grayskull, and it's his birthday and Duncan bakes him a cake. Like, it's super silly, and it made me feel like that's Masters of the Universe more than anything, isn't it? Like, this stupid idea, it's fun. Like, I really like the, like I said, I like you said, I like the performer, and I feel like they do a great job at making him funny.
Yes. You bring up a really great episode. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that episode is like a standalone episode.
Yeah.
You know, It's this one of those, like, I forget what they used to call them on these, like, sitcoms and stuff, but it's like essentially where it's on one set.
Bottle episode. Call them, like,
bottle episode. Thank you. Thank you. And it's essentially like a bottle episode with Skeletor and Duncan, right? Like you mentioned. And there's like a montage at one point where you know, Duncan makes him like birthday cake and they do a dance and stuff. And they like look up at the stars, the constellations. And it's so goofy and cheesy, but it's so much fun. And we talked about Skeletor being funny and scary. I feel like this Skeletor, I wouldn't say Deadpool, but it's like that kind of awareness of, like, he kind of almost breaks the fourth wall sometimes.
Right. His humor is so contemporary.
Yes.
It feels fourth wall breaky, because why would this guy on another planet have such a quick, like, contemporary type way? Like, he talks like a teenager, like some of like his little asides, or like he'll, you know, he'll say something scary and then he'll like follow it up with like, right, am I right, like like that kind of thing.
It's really
good, like, timing.
Yeah, he'll be like, too soon, he'll say something like that, you know. He's very different from your typical Skeletor, and I think he's great. He's massive too. One of the things about the art style is that it's like so over the top. Like, He-Man is like a fucking chimney, and Skeletor is like a chimney. They're gigantic.
Well, they're like, it's like, here, I have a doll.
It's
like, you know, it's the typical, I'll say Staten Island where I live, Staten Island gym rat, where he completely forgets leg day and is all upper body. Like, it's just, and what I love is in the Sword of Power is like it's like the same size of Adam. It's like comically huge.
Yes.
And we were talking a little bit in the last episode about this. In this show, I feel like there's magic, but magic and science are kind of depicted together in a way. Like, magic is science, kind of like the way it is in Doctor Who sometimes.
Yes.
When he says, by the power of Grayskull, the sword, like, it looks like it's like a transformer. Like, it opens up and like extends, and you can see like wires and stuff inside of it. I really like it though. You know, I feel like the style looks like toys, like not in a stop motion kind of way, but in the way where like they look plasticky and shiny, and they kind of have that sort of like loose physics of toys. It feels like the show is literally someone with toys making the toys fight. And I kind of like really love that.
Yeah, that is a really great point. Did you ever see that movie Book of Life by any chance?
Which
it was produced by Guillermo del Toro. It's like with
oh
the
no, I haven't. Puppet. I haven't.
So okay, so one thing about that movie that's really great is it's framed as if it's told with like a puppet show, and you know it's set up like it's a puppet show, but then when you start watching it, you know the characters come to life and they still look like puppets, even though it isn't a puppet show anymore, right? And so the main character has that kind of that wooden look to him. I think it's got that kind of feel, like you said, like where it's toys. That's a really great point.
And I love, you know, it. We were saying last week that the charm of the original Masters of the Universe was a sort of sword and sorcery meets sci-fi, and you have less of that in this. But it's sort of more like sword and sorcery meet like cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, like Teela has like these things that are constantly floating around her, or Duncan is man at arms, but he's not the man at arms in the sense that in the original show he's like the head of the army. He's the man at arms. That's his superhero name, and he basically has like an Iron Man suit.
Yes,
you know, like, well, that's another interesting thing is they all have totems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like He-Man has the sword, man at arms. Duncan has like a wrench.
Right.
Crass has the helmet with the jewel in it. What does Teela has her claw. Staff? Oh yeah, Cringer. That was. What do you think about that? Cringer has been declawed in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's so ironic because he is the least cringy of any Cringer, right? He's not scared to begin with ever. And so he kind of even sounds like the guy that plays Man at Arms in Revelation, like the voice of Cringer in this show. But yeah, it's this idea of he's almost like this sort of like neutered animal. He doesn't have his ability, and then he gets it thanks to Adam. And, you know, in the old cartoon, it was depicted like he was this big coward, and then He-Man makes him into this courageous fighter.
Yeah.
In this, he is a courageous fighter. It's just that he's sort of disabled or whatever. He doesn't have his claws.
Yeah.
I think he's great. I mean, just I wanted to kind of bring up one point along what you were just talking about. I also feel like it has a very sort of anime kind of influence too.
For sure.
Yeah. Because like with certain anime, there's not really that distinction between science fiction and fantasy. They kind of blend together. And I mean, every single show, there's that sequence where they power up and they change.
Right. You think about like Sailor Moon or what, like.
Yeah.
That's transformation sequence.
Yes. It's a great. And also like in animes and then also like in video games, they kind of have like power moves that they do. And so,
yes, they do. Well, that's another thing. Yeah. It's absolutely, I think, influenced by video games too. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the way that our culture is, right? It's that like video games have become so prevalent that like anime and superheroes and video games just kind of all blend together into storytelling now.
Yeah.
My daughters, you know, they watched She-Ra with me, but then they also like this show on right now called Miraculous, The Adventures of Ladybug and Cat Noir. Have you ever seen that? Or
I haven't heard of that.
It's like a French anime. It was like made in France, and it kind of reminds me of this He-Man show a little bit too, because like aesthetically it looks very similar, but they also have like moves where they power up and they go like, oh, you know, cat claws or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Well, He-Man has like Thunderstrike or whatever, right? Where he turns gold and he uses the sword to like, I don't know, he like swipes it towards you. And then also they can do power moves together, which felt very Power Rangers. Like, let's the three of us put it all together. And, you know, I love it. And there are so, you know, if you're a fan of transformation sequences, this is a show for you, because every single character, bad guy and good guy, gets a transformation sequence.
Yeah.
And it's, they really lean into, and this is very anime, they lean into that idea of what we're seeing in the transformation is almost like extra textual. Like, it's not within the narrative. It's some liminal space. Like, you'll see like their icon glow behind them and they're like in a star field, like, you know, and part of that is just so you can use the same one every time. I mean, they did that with the original show too.
Right.
But it's just so cool. Like, you know, you'll see them all do it. And then all the bad guys do it. And it's I kind of like it every time. Every time I'm like, yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah. It takes up like 7 minutes of a 22 minute show, you know?
Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah, when you compare the two shows, it's very interesting, right? Because this show is very stylized, and it's very much about like cool aesthetics and the fun part of the original cartoon, like the changing and how cool it is to see them use their powers. And the other show, Revelation, it's much more about like the characters and their legacy, you know? So it's like two very different things. Yeah.
I mean, in this show, it's really not the same characters. Like, some of the characters are very similar, like Adam is very similar to the Adam we knew. But going back to kind of what I was saying last week about how these began as names and archetypes, it's sort of like, let's take these archetypes. What is Man-at-Arms? What is the, you know, forget anything you know. Just look at the figure and what do you see? You see a guy with like a club and like a sort of yellowy orange suit. Okay, well, that could be anything. Duncan is not Teela's father. They're friends. And I'm, for a little second, I was like, I really hope they don't make them romantic partners, because then you'd have a little bit of like X-Men 2, where you had like Mystique and Nightcrawler. This is weird. Like, I'm so glad that they're contemporaries, they're friends. So they're kind of all new. I mean, Skeletor, and He-Man's He-Man, but Crass is really new. I mean, Ram Man, he wasn't that much of a character, really. Like, what, he's barely in the other show too, the Kevin Smith show. He has one little cameo.
Yeah, which is funny. I don't think we mentioned this, but like Danny Trejo is Ram Man in that version.
Yes.
So random, right? I mean, they're very different. The show, like you said before, it starts out with Evelyn being Evelyn. And then there's this other guy, he's called Cronus. And I'm like, okay, well, which guy is that from the cartoon? I couldn't really put my finger on it. And then, you know, obviously he gets that jaw piece. And I'm like, okay, it's Trap Jaw. But it's like, they kind of start out as different characters. And they have to, like, morph or transform to become the 80s Masters of the Universe characters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I feel like Beast Man is the most significant change. Because
yeah, huge.
He has his own episode where they introduce him. And this goes back to what you were saying about you know, Cringer and him being different. The reason why Cringer doesn't have claws is because this guy, Rakaz, like essentially like poached him. He like got him and made him be a fighter in the pit fight. Yeah. And he took off his claws when he tried to rebel. And then Rakaz, didn't you kind of feel like he aesthetically looked the same as Blade from the movie?
Yeah.
I thought that Rakaz was going to be Blade. And then, like, later on when they started to make everyone power up, I'm like, oh, he's going to become Beast Man.
Yeah, I think somebody says something like, oh, you're more like a beast than a man. And I was like, oh, there it is.
Right, exactly. But
yeah, I too at first wasn't sure. And I had forgotten that Cronus becomes Trapjaw. It's interesting because, like, I feel like that's an interesting choice, even besides the remix. Because, like, they could have easily, you know, they make Evelyn and Cronus like a twosome. They could have easily made that Evelyn and Beast Man.
Right.
You know what I mean? They decided to make Cronus a bigger deal. They decided to make Ram Man or Ram Mam a bigger deal. They decided to take Cringer and say, like, is he just one Green Tiger? Where are the rest? Like, what is the story of the Green? Like, where do they live? What's their deal? I really like the way they dove into some things.
Yeah, absolutely. Like with Evelyn and with Cronus, for example, there's the idea that they actually, I think, served King Randor at one point, and then they had a coup. And they had a coup because of Skeletor or Keldor. And so you have like all this sort of, you know, like Eterno politics going on. And there's this, you know, revolution against the king. And then there's this like tribe in the wilderness with like Crass and her dad and you know, Cringer, they're their own little thing too. So it has a lot of world building in it. But it's interesting how they introduce all those elements to you in the very beginning and it seems very foreign. But then like by like episode like I'd say three or so, it's like, oh no, it's pretty much like the old Masters of the Universe.
It gets there.
Yeah. I wasn't really as much of a fan of Trapjaw when he would change. I didn't like that aspect of like his mouth being like a grinder.
You
didn't like it or
Well, I know what it is. It's they took the original designs and they like pumped them full of steroids. Like literally with He-Man and Skeletor. But like all of them, like it's all that idea to the most extreme. You know, if he's got a claw, he's got a gigantic claw. If he's got a sword, it's the same size as his body. Like it's all shit like that. And part of me loves the the hyperbole of the style. It's super hyperbolic. It's super like, I guess that's also why I feel like it's like kids playing with toys, because it's just, it's really just power. Like, it's just like, it's like a kid with two figures just mashing them together sometimes. Like, it's just, it's just like, what are we looking at? It's just, it's wild. We should say the original sorceress is referred to in this as Eldris.
Right.
And she's basically the same character, but she's dead. She died trying to save Adam as a kid. And that's also the accident that he lost his memory in.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't gone into it yet. Season 3 of the show begins in like a week from when we're recording this. But they've hinted that this Teela is also the daughter of... Because it's all, they're both African-American, and the same actress voices both as well.
Oh, okay. Well,
so,
there you go.
So, yeah. But this Teela is interesting because Teela was always Adam's best friend, but Crass kind of takes the role of that in this show.
Yes.
This Teela is, you know... She and unlike what strikes me is very similar to the Kevin Smith show is this Teela is always a magic user and then is referred to as a witch and then becomes the sorceress. So it's the sort of parallel thinking I find really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the same thing. I find it interesting, like we were talking about how it's like video games or how, you know, they took the uncle thing from the 2002 show. I like the idea of, you know, pop culture grows and it builds on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like any, you know, and you can look at anything like that. Like I Love Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the most hated versions is the Michael Bay movies. But like one thing from the Michael Bay movies that was cool was Donatello wore goggles. And now in the most recent animated show, it's nothing like the Michael Bay movies, but Donatello has goggles. So it's like they liked the goggles and they kept it.
Right.
And you could also see like in the old Star Wars canon, there were green lightsabers and blue lightsabers. And if you, in the old canon, there was green, blue, and red. And you pick based on whoever you are. Now in the canon, there's only green and blue and purple, but the much like Harry Potter, very influenced by Harry Potter, the stone, the kyber crystal chooses you, and you have to steal someone else's lightsaber to turn it red.
Right.
So it's like whether they were purposely saying let's make this more like Harry Potter or not, those ideas are in the ether, right? It's in the pop culture mindset, so it seeps into something else, and I find all of that so fascinating.
Oh, I mean, it is fascinating, you know, without a doubt. Like, it's interesting, like, with Teela becoming sorceress, it's like, where did they come up with that idea of them? Because, like you said, it's parallel thinking, right? It's in the Kevin Smith one, and it's in this one. Who made that connection of, like, okay, well, it makes sense for Teela to become sorceress, right? And in the Teela in this show, she's not only a witch, but they keep referring to her as a hand witch, right?
Yeah.
And it's like you were kind of talking about like sort of like cross-pollination of ideas from different franchises. I think that like what they do is they take like simple stuff from when we were kids that kind of doesn't make sense, and then they like kind of cross-pollinate it with stuff that is more orderly to begin with, and then they try to like make it make sense. And I think that that's what they're trying to do with the magic in this world. And I mean, like, one little aspect I forgot to mention, too, that I thought was really cool was, like, when Evelyn or Evelyn would do her spells and, like, you would see just a close-up of her mouth when she would do them. You know, that's once again, like, a very anime kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool. It's like you say that, you know, there might be a version of one of these franchises that no one really likes, but they just kind of cherry pick what is the, like what the people do like. Obviously, like the Keldor thing from the 2002 version is in this.
Yeah.
I'd actually be very intrigued to see what they do with Skeletor in the Kevin Smith version moving forward now, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
because that would be. Yeah. Because, I think they have the same producers, which is just somebody from Mattel. So Mattel is obviously like, this is their thing. So they're involved on both sides. And supposedly, I don't know if it's going to happen really, but supposedly there's going to be a live action Masters of the Universe film made for Netflix that is not going to be in the canon of either of these things. So it's going to be yet another different canon.
Yeah. I wonder what the
behind. She was not in the canon of either of these. right? Mm-hmm. In She-Ra, if you watched all of She-Ra and the Princesses of Powers, which I did and loved, they revealed in the last season that Grayskull was the name of a team of people. So when she says for the honor of Grayskull, she's not referring to a castle.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, right? Because, like, you were talking about how, like, there's all these different versions of He-Man on Netflix right now, and there's going to be this movie, and then She-Ra is its own canon. And it's like, why is there this big push for the He-Man stuff right now? I'd like to know the behind the scenes. Like, why is there so much happening simultaneously? Because pretty much the way it works is when they reboot these shows, it's almost like once every, like, generation, or kind of like,
yeah.
You know how, like, in elementary school, you know, you go from kindergarten to fifth grade? It's like once you go through a cycle of that, they reboot Transformers, reboot Ninja Turtles, you know? And so, you know, we got this gluttony right now where we have, like, She-Ra, we have Masters of the Universe and the other one, and then a movie, too. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on at Mattel.
One answer is that, like, it's the 40th anniversary.
So they're thinking,
okay, fans of the show are now fully grown adults that have some kind of income, right? So they could spend their income on our shit.
You're right.
And I also think part of it has to do with Netflix, right? Because remember, Netflix, they also did a Voltron. They also, aren't they doing a Transformers? So Netflix, so in part of the Netflix empire, I think just a few years ago, they were like, let's, you know, there'll be a Netflix Smurfs. They'll eventually do everything, I think, at Netflix. Yeah, I think Netflix just kind of is going through the 80s pop culture, right? You know, they'll eventually do everything, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that's another reason why, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's funny? I had this conversation this weekend. My wife and I went to a friend's house, one of her friend's house, like, near Dallas. And it's so funny. I had this conversation. It's like, you're the person I should be having this fucking conversation with. Like, I was talking about how, like, you know, Transformers and Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles, they keep repeating, and just another generation takes them on, right? But then, like, Snoopy, for instance, like, maybe our parents and us are into Snoopy, but, like, kids aren't into Snoopy or Peanuts now, you know?
Right.
And then, like, Popeye, like, our parents and us know about Popeye, but, like, kids don't give a shit about Popeye, right? So I was trying to figure out, like, why is this shit, like, what makes it repeat and what makes it not repeat? And my wife brought up Smurfs. She said that Smurfs weren't really big now.
No, they're not.
And I think it has something to do with the actual toys, right? It's like He-Man, Transformers, Ninja Turtles, they all have these great, great toy sets that you could just keep remaking. Whereas I think with, like, Peanuts and Smurfs and shit, it's just like they maybe have, like, plush toys that don't really, you know? So I think there's something to, like, the reason why they have to keep making these has to do with the toys themselves, you know?
Right. Well, think about this. Like, if it works as a toy, what that means is it's a high concept.
Okay.
Right? Like, you look at the Peanuts, there's Snoopy, and then there's a bunch of little kids. That doesn't say anything to you, right? If I show you Ninja Turtles, you immediately say, okay, those are four green turtles that have martial arts weapons. If you look at the Masters of the Universe toys, here's a sorceress, here's a blue, like, you can see it all. So I think you're right. I think the things that are archetypal that way have an easier time repeating because you can just kind of, like, gut the meaning and put a new meaning into it.
Wow.
Which is kind of like what this is, right? I mean, this Masters of the Universe show that we're talking about now is so different from the one when we were kids. See, I would love for them. Last time you were talking about Masters of the Multiverse.
Which was
a very cool comic that it put together the He-Man of the movie, the He-Man of the original show, the He-Man of the original comic, who's like this brutal barbarian, and He-Man from the New Adventures of He-Man, which was the first spinoff, where he was, like, in space. Right. That's, like, kind of the most maligned one.
Yeah.
I want them to redo it now because there's so much more they could do now. Like, have these two in, have the She-Ra in.
Yeah.
I would love to do it. And I loved what they did in that comic with the movie one, because in the movie, there's no Adam. But in this comic, they say that, well, I'm at war, so I have to always be He-Man. I was like, way to make the movie so much better just with that one line.
Yeah. That's I would love for them to do that with this He-Man that we're talking about today and with that She-Ra cartoon, because I love both of those shows dearly. You know, they made, like, a Ninja Turtles movie that was, like, the different cartoon versions of the Turtles teaming up.
Yes. Was it IDW? There's a Ghostbusters comic that does the exact same thing. It's the Ghostbusters from the movie, plus the real Ghostbusters, plus the extreme Ghostbusters from the 90s, and then the female ones from 2016. They had them all, like, different dimensions, and it's, like, the exact same multiverse idea.
Yeah, because, I mean, boy, did you make a really good point. You should, like, write a thesis or something, man, because, like, I was just thinking about, like, you're talking about, like, how you know what, like, you can visualize the story you're going to tell or the adventure you're going to have with these figures. And that's why they can all be radically different and almost like a multiverse of different versions, but they're still at the quality adventure you can have with them. And then I was thinking about like Peanuts and stuff. If I gave some kids some Peanuts toys, they'd be like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this?
right.
You know, what do I do with Snoopy, right?
Right.
But like with He-Man, it's like, okay, I'm going to make him fight this guy and he's going to use this power. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a real good.
You know, you were just saying about crossing them over. Don't you feel like this show, even though this is 3D and She-Ra Princesses of Power 2D, don't you feel like this show and the Netflix She-Ra could easily cross over?
Of course, yes.
They have a much more, I think, cohesive tone.
Mm-hmm.
And even like a sense of humor and stuff.
Yeah, because in both shows, it's like X-Men, basically, right? You just have teams of people with powers, right? He-Man, they kind of have to all turn their powers on, but She-Ra, they kind of have them automatically. But they all get them from like a sort of ancient source of power too, right?
Yeah. It's so interesting because, again, about how culture influences things. We live in such a superhero-dominated culture that you can see that so much in this show. Like, I mean, I don't know if I ever even thought of He-Man as a superhero. I guess he is, right? Like you said, he's like Shazam. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I as a little kid, if you said who's your favorite superhero, I would have never even thought to say He-Man. He was something different.
Yeah, it gets a little weird. I never thought of him as a superhero either. Sometimes people refer to the Ninja Turtles as superheroes, and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know?
Yeah, right.
They're ninjas. No, I never made that connection either. But in this show, it very much is like the Shazam family. In the Shazam movie that just came out, and then in the comics, it's like there's the main character of Shazam, who used to be Captain Marvel, and you know, he calls upon the power of the wizard Shazam, and then all of his like family members get powers too, and there's a talking tiger and that shit too. And then the bad guys kind of have their own way of summoning power too, and that's what the Dark Masters do in this show. I mean, it's cool. I would love for there to be a crossover, and I mean, it all kind of comes down to, there's this idea that the planets they live on, like in the She-Ra world, they have Etheria, right? That's where they live. And then here it's Eternia. And I think both worlds essentially have like a source of power. In this, they kind of go into the idea of Skeletor tapping into Havoc, which I think that's a big thing for Skeletor this time around. It's kind of different from the other versions.
Right. There are two kinds of powers, Havoc power, which is green. And then I guess like good power, which is gold.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I just think it's really cool that like his minions and stuff can like, you know, turn those powers on too. And it's interesting because like there really aren't other races. There's pretty much just like a human race. And then there's like those kind of like everyone kind of has different colored skin.
Yeah. It reminds me of, remember the cartoon Doug? It's like that. Like some people are just purple.
Right. That's a good comparison. We haven't even mentioned, I forgot his fucking name though, but the guy who has wings, what's his name? Stratos?
Oh, Stratos. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, his people kind of seem different and unique, but I mean, they look just kind of, like you said, like human, but like, you know, kind of maroon colored.
He,
unlike the other heroes, he does not power up. He just naturally can fly.
Right.
But I mean, I thought he was a great freaking addition to this show too.
Yeah. Well, there's that really funny parody in the second season where like he makes his own little team and they try to have like a power up montage, but it looks lame.
Right. Yeah. He has that Mosquita Tara or whatever the fuck her name is.
Yeah. And then the big wasp that's voiced by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah. Mosquita Ra. I remember her from like when we were kids. I think there was a toy of her.
Yeah.
I think there's toys of all of them, including the friggin' wasp too.
Probably. I love that. And I love when they would do big changes too. Like instead of Panthor, Panthor is like a motorcycle.
Yes, yes.
And they call it Painthor.
Right. Yeah.
Because he sees Cringer and he's like, oh, I want one of those. And like, that's right. what he wants for his birthday, Skeletor. So he's right. like, I made you a motorcycle. So I really loved when they did stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, with all these toy lines that we keep referencing, they would go through all these changes and they would come up with like new versions of the toys. And with He-Man, I mean, you could always tell when a toy line was almost at an end because it would just get weirder and weirder. And I remember with like He-Man, you eventually got to like these snake men and stuff, right? At the very end there. And I think that that's kind of what this is heading towards now. And I guess like probably the inspiration for that was that, you know, Skeletor lives in Snake Mountain. And it's like the idea that like there was this elder snake race. That's a big part of the mythology for this show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, in the whole second season, Skeletor is trying to steal this MacGuffin that looks like the Sith holocron.
Yes.
And if he gets all three, he can raise the snake people from the dead and have like an undead army.
Right.
And the good guys win. But then I guess I was shocked by the end of season two. I was literally like, what the hell just happened?
Yes, yes, yeah. It was a super big cliffhanger ending. I mean, you're such a big fan of Crass, and you know, Ram Ma'am, I'm sorry. Like, did you see it going in that direction with her? Like, what did you think was going to happen with her?
I knew that she was going to be her crown or the jewel in her helmet was going to be connected to Havoc power, because it seemed like they were hinting at that throughout. But then they do something really interesting where the second to last episode feels like a finale, and it kind of feels like it's all done. And then the last episode is like this denouement where it's like kind of an epilogue, but then the ghost of Skeletor, because Skeletor, he's not killed, but he's like sucked into pure Havoc power. So this ghost of Skeletor is talking to Crass, and he's like basically in her head, like, ah, no one trusts you. Look, there's no room for you here. And basically turns her against them. And I love, she does a power up where now she has green power and she changed her name to Rampage.
Yes.
So I love it. I love that in this world, like, you have to have like a name that goes with your power. You've got to like stop and think about it and be like, oh, I'm going to be this. This is what everyone has to call me this.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of these franchises, right? Because they all have like names that are like kind of like code names, that's what everyone calls them, right? Yeah. In this particular show, they show them having like original names to begin with, like Cronus is the name of Trapjaw, and Evelyn, you know, is Evelyn, right? And then this, her name is I was thinking Xtina, but that's like Christina Aguilera, right? Like,
Crastine.
Crastine, there you go. Yeah.
And
so she becomes Ram Ma'am. And it's just so that kids can remember it. It's nice and easy. And they already like built in superhero names. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. What do you think of the Castle Grayskull in this show?
It's like, okay, I'm trying to remember, like, it's a little hazy, honestly, what the fuck Grayskull is. Like, can you kind of give me a refresher again?
Well, it looks like Castle Grayskull, right? But it floats in the sky. Right. And it's referred to a couple times as a ship because it moves places too.
Right, right.
And when you're inside of it, you're like it's almost like the TARDIS, like you're in a different dimension because there's no roof. Like when you're inside, you see like the universe above you. Mm-hmm. And at the end of, well, at first in season one, no one knows where it is. And Skeletor finds it, and kind of like the toy, he uses the sword to find it again and open it. But then at the end of season one, Eldris, the old sorceress, moves it to another like pocket dimension, and they're lost. And then they end up like it reappears in Kronos's world, Kronos's like city. So it's really interesting because it kind of it's greenish and it's got the skull. It kind of looks like the original one, but has all these different elements to it.
I mean, I think it's just like another fun way to change up the lore, you know. It was kind of nebulous in the old 1980s cartoon too. I mean, it has that great image that you know, they use from like the old Frank Frazetta artwork. That's with like the original Castle Grayskull, you know, and it just looks so cool. And you know, obviously you always see it behind He-Man in the original cartoon. But yeah, it is kind of, comparing it to a TARDIS is a good idea. It kind of reminds me of like the island in Lost, where they are actually able to move the island. But I think that just kind of lends itself to being a toy, because then you can like take the plate case and move it around. You know, I don't know if they ever.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, I don't know if they made a playset of it. I have in the store seen that He-Man that you have, and I've seen I think like Trapjaw, but that's it so far. Do they have all the figures?
No, I love design, so I just got the ones I really like the design. I have He-Man,
yes,
Crass.
Sure, yeah, she's cool looking.
Orc-O,
yeah,
and Sorceress.
Oh yeah, that's a cool looking toy. Jeez, yeah. You know, it's funny because like I said this in our last episode, but the Kevin Smith Show, it really has this big focus on like well-known actors voicing these He-Man characters. This show has more of like a pedigree of like established voice actors that have been in a whole bunch of different shows, and so like the guy that is Prince Adam in He-Man, he's Yuri Lowenthal, and he was Ben 10. He is Sasuke in what the fuck is that anime that my kid loves? Naruto. The guy that played Orko is the guy that does SpongeBob, you know?
Yeah. The only name in this that I was like, that's kind of a name, is Manny Faces is Stephen Fry.
Right.
And what they did with him, I thought was really interesting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the toys of the original cartoon are so ridiculous. It's like, you don't even know where they came up. And, you know, he's this weird kind of Jack Kirby looking creature. And they make him like this actor that went through like physical augmentation to be appealing to the kid. It's weird stuff. But he's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my favorite Grayskull is from the movie. I really love the movie Grayskull.
Yeah.
People shit on some of the design elements from the movie, but I really, well, actually, I like the idea of He-Man having a cape, which they do in the movie, and that's a very scary Skeletor, like black robes. But really, if there was one thing that like I would love to see somewhere else, like, is that because they really made it like an H.R. Giger Grayskull.
Yes,
like it's more sci-fi-ish, but clearly is a skull. I want to see more of that.
Yeah. I mean, the money for that movie all went into that one set that they show over and over again in the inside of Castle Grayskull, you know? And that 1980s movie, it's kind of funny because like there's like, you know, 15 minutes on Eternia and then like an hour and a half on, you know, a suburban backlot, right?
like
the Back to the Future set. But yeah, I mean, aesthetically, it looked really cool. And there's even carryover from that movie into this.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you showed me this clip, this like Kevin Smith panel where they talked about season 3 of the show. And I honestly, I couldn't really see what they were showing because it was like taken from someone's lap, right? But I was wondering if like, was there any kind of like stuff that you spotted that was from the movie and in this?
Oh, I know that there was because I wrote it down. Let me see if I made a note of it. There's definitely stuff from the movie that I was like, oh, that's definitely from the movie.
Yeah. It's funny because that video, it's like 50 minutes long. And it's like someone obviously filming it like from their lap and pointing up at the stage. And they like move around a lot. So there's a lot of like awkward like shuffling noises.
Yeah. Hey, did you notice this, that there was like a blade? There was a running joke. There was a Blade Runner reference.
What do you mean? In the Netflix show?
Yeah. There's an episode where like they're underground. It's in the second season. They're underground in Orko. It's Orko and the King. And they're like underground hiding from Skeletor because Skeletor took over.
Yeah.
Which is actually itself kind of like the movie.
Thank you. Yes. That's what I was thinking.
And the King wakes up and he goes, origami unicorn. And then they're like, oh, what? And then I think Orko does the same thing. And it's like, no kid would ever get that. That is just for the old nerds.
Yes. This old nerd did get that. You're right. I forgot about that. I did like a double take. I'm like, wait a minute, Blade Runner? Yeah. But no, you're right. You know, clearly in these franchises, there's always like that kind of standout moment. I think I said this in the last episode where it's like, the movie is just such a big touchstone for the franchise. So like we kind of go through these cycles, like in Transformers, you go through the cycle where like Optimus Prime dies and Megatron gets transformed into Galvatron. Like that happens in all the different versions of Transformers, right?
Yeah.
And, like Unicron shows up. In this, you go through the cycle where Skeletor takes over Eternia, you know, and then He-Man's a rebel. And so that's where we were in last season. And I guess we're going to be in that for season 3 too.
I guess. I'm not sure. Will you? I don't know where it's going to go, honestly. It looks like Eldris is coming back.
Yes.
To life in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember, did you have those Snake Men figures when you were a kid?
Yes. Do you remember that the original Teela figure has a snake, like she's wearing some snake thing? Because in the comic, she had a completely different kind of character.
Yep. Yeah,
the snakes was always there, but that's a cool thing. It's like, you go, okay, what was snakes in He-Man? I remember snakes being something. It's like, well, who cares, right? You know it's an element in the stew. So now we're going to make it this other thing. And I think in the trailer for season 3 of the show, Grayskull comes back. So yes. That's, again, that's something else that both series have, King Grayskull.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm interested in see like how they do that, cuz in the Kevin Smith show, it's in pre-Ternia. It's like having, he's sort of like been dead for a long time. And in this new one, he looks like it looks like he's like, he comes with the snake people. So it'll be interesting to see like how they do that.
Yeah, I think so. It's been like about a week since I watched the show now, and I should have taken a note on this, but like, I think the implication was that okay. So there's a dynamic that we haven't talked about in the show, which is that Adam and his father are estranged from each other, because like at first Adam doesn't know that his father's King Randor. He eventually finds out. He goes to talk to King Randor, and King Randor is upset that he has the power of Grayskull, and the power of Grayskull itself is treated like this dangerous element. And I think the idea in this show, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the idea is that like you can bring people back to life, or that like it controls life and death, right?
It's something, I don't know about that, because they needed the snake thing to bring people back to life. But there is this thing where the king says like, no king has ever used the power. You have to not use the power. And Adam's like, well, I'm using the power for good, so why shouldn't I? And, and they kind of like argue again. And he's like, it doesn't matter if you're the prince, you're still a criminal if you use the power. And then he like flies. And this, by the way, He-Man jumps like Superman, like the original Superman before he could fly. He-Man can basically like jump like over buildings. Like he can almost like flying.
Yes.
But then he actually does fly. He surfboards on his sword.
The sword, yeah. I forgot about that.
So it just gets cooler and cooler.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's this idea of like Randor didn't want to use the power, and of course Keldor did.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess we'll see more like how that all fits into it.
Yeah, there's definitely this idea that you don't want to use the power of Grayskull. That like Grayskull was wrong for using that power,
right?
And so the dad is against it. So yeah, I guess we'll see what it is. Yeah, it must have some connection to the Snake Man. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Castle Grayskull is like associated with the good guys, but it's scary, which was always an interesting design element. That it's like. Totally. Like this is supposed to be where the good guys are, but it's gothic and kind of really creepy.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up soon, but I was wondering, you know, what would your idea of like a dream He-Man movie be if they were to, you know, this new Netflix movie, if they were like, Pete, come in, we want you to be an advisor. Like what, like, and I guess also thinking about the conversation we've had about elements repeating, like what would you cherry pick from everything that's come before to like make a really good Masters of the Universe movie?
Oh man, that is a really good question. I kind of wish you'd given it to me in advance, because I could make a 4-page essay, right? I think, okay, how about this? I can tell you stuff that I haven't liked from live adaptations of some of my favorite things. Like, I did not like that the Decepticons were like these sort of vague, random monsters in the Transformers movies. You know, they have such distinct personalities in the Transformers cartoon. And I feel like this show that we just watched shows that like the villains in He-Man are so much fun and they're so interesting. And I really think like you don't want like Beastman just being like a little random lackey that just growls. Like you want to have him talking. You want to showcase his personality. You want to feature all those villains. I think a Skeletor that is like this version, where he's still silly and stuff, but he's scary. I don't want to go full scary like Frank Langella.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't change Adam much from this cartoon. I like Adam in this version.
He's very young in this, though. It's very Shazam. Like in the original show, he was kind of like he was still kind of a man who just became a man. In this, he's like, I don't know how old he's supposed to be, like 14 or whatever, and he literally becomes a guy.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I always kind of saw it as like Adam was kind of like looked at as like a weakling.
Yeah.
You know, even though he looked just like He-Man, just, you know, without muscles and stuff, right? And maybe that would be better. It'd be kind of more interesting to have it like kind of like a guy that seems like weak, and then he becomes a super powerful man. But I like keeping the idea of like Teela being Sorceress's daughter and like eventually becoming Sorceress. I like the idea of the Sorceress maybe not being alive anymore, like just her ghost is around. There's quite a few things from this version I would cherry pick.
Yeah. I like the style of this one.
Yeah. I don't think that I would have Orko be like a robot, though. I think I would have Orko be a trollin. And I know that like in that 1987 version of He-Man, they didn't have Orko. They had Gwildor because like you couldn't pull Orko, right? And I'd like to see like a live action Orko.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like in the trailer for season 3, there is a real Orko. Because remember, this Orko thinks he's Orko the Great. Like he's like a cyborg version of, or like his memories were put into some chip or something. So maybe it's a flashback. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think I've thought about this a little bit longer. I think for sure I would want Taika Waititi to direct it.
Oh, good choice.
Because he's like, if you look at like his movies, especially his Thor movies, I feel like he can get the style and he's good at weaving humor in.
Oh, yes.
Like even like, did you see the last Thor movie?
Of course, yeah.
You know when they go, spoiler alerts for Thor, Love and Thunder, but you know when they like go to that like meeting of the gods and it's like in that huge place and it's like gold? Like I was thinking like this would be such a good He-Man movie.
Yes.
I would do that. But yeah, I don't know. Obviously, I wouldn't want it to take place on Earth like the original movie. It's got to stay in Eternia.
Right. And,
see, that's the thing. Like nerds are always complaining about, oh, you did this, you ruined that. Like, to me, this show that we've been talking about today is respectful with changing things. Just changing things doesn't mean you're shitting on what came before. Changing things could be in the spirit of it. So I think I would want a film, even if it were very different, I would want it to like at least understood what came before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could easily see it being terrible. Right, you can see it being like, you know, I don't know how you feel about the Transformers movies, but like at least after the first one, they get really weird, and then the Ninja Turtles were not great. Like if it were like Michael Bay's Masters of the Universe, you know, it would be like Teela's tits would be out, and like Adam would like turn into He-Man and he like look at his dick, he'd be like, "Whoa, look at this!"
He has the power.
Yeah, it would be a lot of that bullshit. And I'd still go see it, but I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. No. I think we're actually kind of past that time in the way movies are now, where I don't think they're going to make movies like that anymore. They know the value of making it more like accurate for the fans.
Yeah.
I don't know who they were talking about making the newest version of it, but I've seen like some concept art for like new He-Man movies, and I think it looks good. I don't know, like with all the things that are on hiatus or like getting canceled with Warner Brothers, I don't know if like this movie is going to get scrapped too. But I think that you're right that like if it's not like they sacrifice stuff because they want to go with like a director's vision, they want to like just be faithful to the original
creation. Yeah,
I think that you could make something fun, and I think Taika Waititi, that is some inspired choice for director, you know.
He can do it. He's the guy for it, I think.
Yeah. Hey,
thank you so much for being here.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure, man. I enjoyed it.
Love talking Motu with you. Pete, can you just tell the people before you go where they can find your stuff?
Absolutely. Mike mentioned at the top of the show that I have a YouTube channel called The Lassercast. That's where me and my friend Danny talk about horror movies, horror TV shows. I interview a whole bunch of horror authors. It's also a podcast. You can look it up. It's The Lassercast. And then the other one is Comic Books Transformed, where me and my friend Brian talk about all kinds of media that are adapted from our favorite comics. That's a YouTube channel and a podcast too.
Awesome. Well, we end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.